Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske, a genre-twisting docudrama about family and a documentary about a legendary high-end New York department store. Those movies top the list of art, independent, and foreign films on today's docket. We'll also talk about a chilling film based on a true story about a devoted family man who leads a double life as a contract killer. That film's title, The Iceman. We'll also talk about a silent black-and-white retelling of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Lots of intriguing films to talk about today, and we've got the right people to do it. Back with us again, our film professor, Cynthia Haynes. Cynthia, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
And Bob Butler, he's a former film critic for The Star who now works at the Kansas City Public Library. You can read his movie reviews at butlerscinemascene.com. Robert, how are you?
Greetings and salutations.
KCUR Steve Walker is away this week, but you can see his film reviews at kcur.org and just go to the up-to-date page. And Cynthia, he's got several films up there.
He does. What Maisie, what Maisie likes.
Yeah. What does she like?
What Maisie saw, excuse me. Yeah. What Maisie saw, Bergdorf, Iceman, In the House, and Renoir.
Ah, okay. Well, since we last gathered here, there have been some significant changes on the local theater scene. Bob, what are you seeing out there?
Well, two things. First, we lost a theater. The Screenland Crossroads at 17th and Washington, a wonderful small theater, which in recent years had concentrated mostly on what I like to call 20-something punk movies. But nonetheless, they were providing a real service. Their lease came up. The landlord wanted so much money that they're now out looking for a new location. I hope they find one.
I think my wife and I saw Amelie there at least three times.
There you go. Exactly right.
Yeah.
And it was probably one of the first places with a leather couch and
reclining chairs in the front row. Yeah.
And they were very good to independent filmmakers and to local filmmakers, giving them an opportunity to show their work there.
Hmm.
So that's too bad. Now, on the other side, we have a new theater in town.
A new theater complex in town.
Yes. Yeah. Standees is in the Prairie Village Shopping Center, about three blocks from where I grew up. It consists of a restaurant, a kind of semi-high-end restaurant, and three movie theaters. Now, the restaurant has been designed, I'm told, to operate on its own, so the movie theaters don't support it or vice versa. I won't talk about the food. I'm no food critic, although I hear good things. What I will talk about are these three fantastic 80-seat theaters, which are just about as comfortable as I... You know what? When I got in there, I thought, this isn't like a movie theater. This is like a rich man has invited me into his basement to the screening
room.
That's
exactly how it feels. I walked through it last weekend.
Great projection, great seating, beautiful aesthetics. And the films they're offering are what I would call, I was going to say watered-down art. They're not going to show foreign films. I don't see them showing documentaries, but they're going to show movies like Quartet.
Much Ado About Nothing.
Much Ado About Nothing. Things that are kind of,
genre straddling.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Genre straddling. They're not going to go for big popcorn movies. They don't want that audience. They're looking for moms and dads, suburbanites, who are willing to, drive a few blocks or even walk into their theater.
So this is supposed to be a neighborhood theater. I think it's the first of several that some former AMC executives, Frank Rash and Peter Brown, are involved
in. That's right.
And it's an interesting contrast to know that AMC, I believe, established the whole concept of stadium seating. Also, the concept that I didn't think worked very well of serving people food while they're watching a movie. So they're going to the other extreme, and the restaurant, the 211-seat dining room, is supposed to support the theaters, not vice versa.
Well, it's a beautiful place. Again, I was very impressed when I walked through. A very small, intimate, all of those things, and the seats, very, very comfortable.
Oh, and we should point out, this is not a buy a meal and eat it in the theater. You can get some pretty great little desserts and things, but you're not going to have a wait staff walking in front of you and plopping food down.
You can bring in your wine glass. They're going to be showing The Internship, Now You See Me, The Great Gatsby, and Mud.
Oh, The Internship's going to be there. That's kind of a popcorn movie, though.
In a sense, it is, but it's not loud. It's not noisy. No explosions. Yeah. No superheroes.
Well, that place is called Standees. It's in the middle of the Prairie Village Shops, in case you're wondering where it is. Okay. Well, some new films opening up this week, Cynthia Haynes. Let's go to one, Love Is All You Need. It's a film about a lonely parents of a bride and bridegroom who find love.
Well, it is for the older crowd. There's no doubt about it. I sort of thought I walked in on Mamma Mia without the music because it's a very similar premise. And we have the charming Pierce Brosnan starring in the film. It was directed by Susan Baer, who is a very famous Danish director. And this is a little piece of trivia here. She's the only female Danish director to have directed two movies nominated for Best Foreign Language Film at the Academy Awards.
My goodness.
She was director of In a Better World that won the Oscar in 2011 and After the Wedding, which was nominated in 2007. So I'm really surprised that she's made this very, very lightweight romantic comedy. It is sweet. There is an issue about this miserable widower played by Pierce Brosnan, and he has aged extremely well. And
what is it about that guy? What is it about some people?
Clean living.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like me. I'm aging extremely well, too.
I think he's really an underrated actor, and I think he did a really good job with this film. Trine, and I'm mispronouncing her name probably, Dorum, plays Ida, who's an unhappily married woman with cancer, whose daughter is marrying Bronson's son. Hmm. And it's like I said, it's a story for the older crowd. It's G-rated, covers some interesting topics. But we've got a clip here where, in fact, we learn about the difference in personalities and the attitude that these two characters have toward each other.
This is from Love is All You Need.
Michael, you can't be both worthless and unambitious. It's his 7th birthday. He won't even remember you being there. Just buy him a card and get on the plane. Are we clear? Good. Thank you.
I really don't understand why anybody will work for you. When you're so awful and stupid and not nice.
Awful, stupid, and not nice.
Right. Good money.
Yeah, very slight premise here. They run into each other literally with their cars in a parking garage on their way to beautiful Italy. I mean, the scenery is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned earlier, her daughter is marrying his son. And then guess what happens at the end?
Okay. Again, that film,
I bet
Love
you can.
Is All You Need. Okay. Bob Butler, let's move on to a film that you're very high on. It's titled Stories We Tell. It's a family secret revealed in a documentary directed by Sarah Polley,
yes. She's a Canadian actress. She's been in lots of movies. Probably our listenership wouldn't have seen Dawn of the Dead, but it's one of my favorites. Anyway, Sarah has gotten into directing. She did a great movie about Alzheimer's with Julie Christie.
Fantastic
called,
movie.
What is it?
Away from Her.
Her last movie was called Take This Waltz.
Another good film about
a relationship breaking up. This is something else entirely. Throughout her life, Sarah Polley has been haunted by the memory of her late mother. Diane Polley and, like her father, Michael Polley, were Canadian actors. Almost from the time she was born, Sarah would hear family jokes that she wasn't her father's daughter, that her mom had gone off to Montreal to do a play, came back, and 9 months later had a baby.
Which is true.
Which is absolutely true.
That's what happened, yeah.
So Sarah sits down all of her family members, her father, aunts, uncles, brothers, sisters, and she doesn't call them, interview them. She says she's interrogating them. You don't actually see Sarah. You hear her voice. Well, you see her once in a while, but it's about her trying to find out the truth of her own family, and it paints this fantastic portrait of her late mother, a woman who apparently was
a beautiful woman,
almost bigger than life, one of her sons once said that watching I Love Lucy, he thought that show was based on his mom. Literally, he thought that show was based on his mom. Gives you an idea of the kind of personality we're dealing with. It's a great study of a marriage, of a woman who wanted more than life was giving her, of a young woman trying to find out, is the man I called my father really my father? And it's done...
I'm a little reluctant to give too much away because this is another
say,
one of those genre-twisting docudramas. And I wish Steve Walker were here to talk about it because he was going to write a review, but he really had ethical issues with the way this story was told.
In what sense?
Well, the question is, to what extent is all of this reenacted? To what extent are these family members reading a script.
Were they?
In fact, the father, as it starts out, is reading a book he wrote about his wife. He's reading from it. Mm-hmm. So clearly he's... The questions have already been answered by the time she sits everybody down in front of the her camera.
Well, what makes that unethical, though?
Well, you've got interviews, you've got archival footage, and you have dramatic recreations. Mm-hmm. And you don't know what's what.
The dramatic recreations have been done so realistically that it was not until toward the end of the movie that I realized that this wasn't actually old footage of the family. This was new footage that just looked very old.
Oh. So did you have trouble with the ethical?
I did not, because I've given up long ago expecting truth from documentaries. It's a great dramatic experience.
Really? What?
Because
Catfish. Catfish is an example.
Almost any movie nowadays, a documentary, they'll fudge. They'll ignore the facts that don't fit their premise going in. Everything is through a filter.
Because that's not my sense as a moviegoer going in to see a documentary. I think I'm seeing something
not
real.
Anymore. Not anymore.
I gave that up a long time ago. I judge it now on does it work as a movie? Yeah. Is it dramatic? Does it grab me? Does it keep me going? Well, this one did.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So,
well, you're sort of shattering one more myth here before my very naive eyes here, I guess.
This isn't like, we grew up watching CBS evening, documentaries.
Yeah.
And these were like news documentaries. They were supposed to be unbiased. There was not supposed to be any,
That's
right. And that's not the case
anymore. And that isn't the case anymore. Now, almost every documentary is quote-unquote personal in some sense. Michael Moore, you telling me that you're going to buy everything in a Michael Moore movie is the gospel?
Well, I have not seen Stories We Tell, the film we're talking about here, but I'm wondering if you can turn that story into a film without doing relying on the techniques that you're describing that she used here. I mean, what's fair game and what's out of bounds?
See, but that's a question that's only to be answered by the people who watch the films. Ah. I mean, we're all going to have a different reaction to it.
And but what was your reaction to it?
I felt cheated toward the end of the film when I realized what was actually going on. I thought,
What's real?
Yeah,
but
it's
you
real,
didn't
what's
feel that
I
did. Way.
I didn't, because I felt that the search, her search for the truth about her own birth, trumped everything. That was genuine. When she talks to her brothers and sisters, maybe they're just feigning being uncomfortable for the camera. I don't know. But the fact is, I think what they're saying, their memories of their mother, are genuine. I don't think any of that's faked.
I can only imagine, again, not having seen the film, that there's a lot of reasons for the family members to be uncomfortable and to feel uncomfortable dealing with their youngest daughter, their youngest sister, who's the filmmaker in this case, and perhaps having to reveal some truth to her that is going to be extremely uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think by the time they got around to making the movie, the story was out.
Mm-hmm.
So in that regard, the film is sort of like
a recreation,
using new interviews. But at the same time, it isn't like she was discovering this as she goes along. She knew going in.
But she portrays it that way.
But she portrays it as an adventure, as a discovery, as an investigation.
But Bob, ultimately, I think we can really look at this in many different ways, and in terms of entertainment, mm-hmm. The extent to which it made you think about your relationships within your own family, is another conversation.
But has Sarah talked about this in interviews she's done? I'm sure this issue has come up.
In Canada, this was sort of a little, cause célèbre. Her father, Michael Polly, not a well-known actor, a stage actor, when he published his book, it was sort of like, thanks to Sarah's ascendancy as an actress and filmmaker, the family is kind of like, the Barrymores up there.
Yeah.
And this was a bit of a, big revelation for everybody.
Well, we should get her on the phone. We should talk to her next month and ask her some of these questions. There's a clip we have for this film,
yes,
Cynthia.
Yes, and this
Haynes.
Is Sarah actually interviewing some of her siblings.
Okay.
My lawyer has said I don't have to talk to you, and so I'm not going to say anything more. I remember Johnny saying that someone thought that your father might be someone that Mom had acted with in a play.
And I told them not to say anything to anyone, but then they turned it into a joke. And I did not participate in the joke, did I? I don't think I ever did.
I remember we talked about how you didn't look like Dad, and Dad joked about it.
I always thought she does look like me. Got that little straight nose. Yeah, definitely. This is all nonsense, but it's fun. Who do you think your father is this week, Sarah?
I'm glad everybody's laughing.
Yeah, I mean, that's... I just want to mention this other film, Catfish. Bob, you saw this.
I remember that.
It was sold as a documentary. These guys go on the internet and they meet some gal and then they try to find her and she's really elusive.
She's
and
not the young, beautiful woman they expected, but a middle-aged person with a mentally disabled
yeah,
husband.
Yeah, and then you subsequently learn none of it is a documentary. The whole thing is a put-on. And now the term catfish has been entered the lexicon.
As a fake documentary that sucks you in.
Hmm. Well, this is – I'm intrigued. I want to go see
it. You do want to see this.
Between the two of you, you've sold me, I guess, Robert, on whether I want to go see this film or not. Stories we tell. You gave it a B+.
I did because I was hanging on every word of it.
Why didn't you give it an A?
Simply because I felt it might have been a little overlong. But that's about it. Also, you know what? I think maybe when I realized that so much of this was recreations, that was a bit of a letdown. All right.
Okay. Boy, interesting. Stories We Tell. If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And we're visiting with our art, independent, and foreign film critics this week, Cynthia Haynes and Bob Butler. Steve Walker is away this week. Bob, let's move on here to a film, Tiger Eyes.
Well, you know, Judy Blume, the author of fiction for children and young people, has sold 80 million books, and she's never had a movie made of any of them.
A feature film.
This is the first time Judy Blume co-wrote the script with her son, Lawrence. Lawrence directed it. It was a low-budget, good-looking movie, and it came off to me like an after-school special. It just, I give it a resounding, eh.
Hmm. I think it's being marketed to the wrong audience. This is a film that I think teenagers would enjoy. They're the ones they should go after. I understand it was a $2 million budget, 23-day shoot. They just don't have the money to market it, although she's been on every talk show promoting it. It's a decent little film. It's a story about a girl who's destroyed by the death of her father and a relationship she develops with a Native American guy played by Russell Means' son.
Tananka,
and who is a very charismatic actor.
Yeah.
And but it's being marketed to art houses, and I just don't think it's going to find its audience there, unfortunately. But it is, I think, available video on demand.
Yeah, it probably is, yeah. Mm-hmm. We have a clip.
Yes, we do.
This is the young woman, Willa Holland, meeting this charismatic young Native American man. They're rock climbing.
Okay.
Hey. It's the tiger.
In the flesh. What were you doing up there?
See those caves? The Tewa people lived in them 800 years ago. My ancestors.
Your ancestors?
Yeah. Now that part of my family lives on a pueblo 30 miles that way.
All I know about my family is my great-grandmother lived in Atlantic City in a boarding house. Uh-huh. Like 2,000 miles that way.
You mean that way?
Right. That way.
You have a lot in common.
I was thinking the same thing.
Tananka Means, as we mentioned, is a son of Russell Means, who has a part playing his father in the film. And unfortunately, and Russell Means is the Indian activist. And unfortunately, he died before the film came out.
You know, one of the things that bothers me about this movie is that... It piles on. Judy Blume was famous for getting into things in children's literature that no one else would touch. And that's all to her credit. But we've got this poor girl whose mother, after the death of her father, is popping pills and in a zombie-like state. And her best friend at this new high school is a alcoholic. And this is just about the most joyless study of adolescence you can imagine. Now, I understand that it plays into... the self-pity that all adolescents embrace to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need it.
Wow. Well, I think the one good thing is that they did a good job of casting the film. And this Willa Holland, who's in Gossip Girl and Arrow, did a very good job.
She is. She's
the
good.
Young teenager.
Yeah. We have an email here from John, actually a tweet, who writes us on Twitter, at KCUR Up to Date. He's writing about Stories We Tell. He says, "A documentary is not unethical if it tells its own version of the truth. It is merely representative of reality."
I can live with that.
But in this case, it's manufacturing a reality.
Yeah. Okay. That's the issue with the film Stories We Tell. Okay, how about some films that have already opened here? Cynthia, Scatter My Ashes at Bergdorf's. This is a documentary infomercial, you called, about the legendary high-end New York department store on Fifth Avenue that absolutely anybody who's anybody has shopped at, right?
Well, it's an absolute hoot. It's for anyone who's into fashion and into shopping in a big way. It's worth your time to watch this this documentary. We've had a lot of films lately. September Issue, Valentino, The Last Emperor,
yes.
Deanna Vreeland, Ultra Suede. And this one was financed by the family that used to own Bergdorf Goodman. They've since sold it to Neiman Marcus, but they still own the incredibly expensive piece of real estate there on Fifth Avenue that houses Bergdorf Goodman.
Oh, I can imagine.
I wish they had approached – they have the who's who of the fashion world interviewed as to the importance of this department store, and they all said that until they got their fashions into Bergdorf's, they hadn't made it. And we're talking about Dolce and Gabbana. These are two guys, Dolce – okay. And Oscar de la Renta, Karl Lagerfeld, Marc Jacobs, Vera Wang. It's really kind of a hoot. The fact that this is a department store that sells $6,000 Louboutin shoes is just
– I want to try on a pair of $6,000 shoes once just to see what that's like.
Unfortunately, they also – the only interviews they do with patrons of the department store, Joan Rivers, Susan Lucci, and Candace Bergen. So we had to rely on some anecdotes about when Bergdorf was in its heyday and Yoko Ono bought several hundred thousand dollars worth of fur coats from them for her relatives over the holidays.
Jackie Kennedy shopped there,
Jackie
Liz Taylor
Kennedy,
shopped there.
Right. And so we're going to hear an anecdote about Elizabeth Taylor shopping at Bergdorf Goodman.
Back when there used to be couture workrooms here in the store, and the fur workrooms were in the store, everything, hat workrooms, I mean, amazing. Elizabeth Taylor had made an appointment to see the furrier in-house, and you could come here and have something custom designed. She made an appointment, and I think everyone in the store was so excited. Oh, Elizabeth Taylor is coming, and she's probably going to want 7 chinchilla coats and, you know, a sable blanket. And everyone was lined up, and in Elizabeth Taylor walked, and she said, "Is it possible that you could make me a pair of mink earmuffs?" And he looked at her and said, "Well, of course we could." And she said, "Well, great." She said, "Because I need 200 pairs of white mink earmuffs to give to everyone on my Christmas list. And we're leaving for Stade in a week."
200 pairs of white mink earmuffs. There you go, from Liz Taylor. That film, again, Scatter My Ashes at Bergdorf's. And it sounds like you liked it, Cynthia.
Yes, it was a lot of fun.
Okay. Well, let's take a break before we come back. When we come back, we'll talk about a whole bunch of other films, including Frances Ha and What Maisie Knew. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Well, this hour, we're visiting with our critics, documentary, art, and foreign films. Cynthia Haynes is here. Bob Butler is also back. We're missing Steve Walker this week. He's away. We're talking about some films now that have been open for a little while. And let's move on to one film, Blanca Nieve. Bob?
Well, you recall a couple years ago when The Artist swept the Academy Awards. Apparently, it's infectious.
Ah.
Blanca Nieve, that's Spanish for Snow White, is a retelling of the classic fairy tale, only it's done as a silent movie. It's even set in the 1920s when silent movies, you know, were in vogue. There will not be a sound clip from this movie since, A, it's in Spanish, and B, it's silent anyway. It's an interesting twist. You have the daughter of a crippled matador. The crippled matador marries his nurse, played by the great Maribel Verdú, a woman who starred in Etu Tambien. She's beautiful, but she can also look very intimidating. She's the evil stepmother. She makes the little girl's life miserable, but when she can break away, she visits her daddy, who shows her how to become a bullfighter. Later, the mother, fearing she's going to lose this inheritance as the girl grows up, orders her chauffeur to take her out in the woods and murder her. Does any of this sound familiar? He botches the job. She's found by a traveling troupe of dwarves who have their own comedy bullfighting routine. They travel around Spain. She becomes their star attraction. And
It's absolutely charming. It's not for everyone, but it's the kind of film that makes very creative use of the medium.
That's
what I appreciate.
It's a gorgeous looking movie.
It's set in 1920. Costumes are spectacular.
Very good music. Yeah. Very good music. A lot of flamenco and a nice orchestral score. I think you're probably a little higher on it than I was. I look at it as kind of an oddball novelty. For some people, they find it a very profound experience. I'm just not one of them.
And I'm convinced that anyone who really liked the artist will like this film also.
Very well may, yeah.
That's Blanca Nieve. It's showing at the Tivoli, right?
Yes.
Okay. Let's move on, Bob Butler, to a film, Frances Ha, a young woman's lighthearted survival story set in New York.
Well, if you have seen the HBO series Girls, you will kind of have an idea vaguely of what's going on here, although this is much less raunchy and actually kind of sweet. Greta Gerwig, who's sort of the it girl of indie movies right now, she's sort of a big, klutzy Lucy character, but at the same time, weirdly graceful. I don't know how she puts those two things together. She plays Frances, who's a girl in the big city. She has a boyfriend who wants her to move in, but she'd rather be loyal to her roommate.
And it's kind of their love story.
It is, between these two women, although, as one of them says to the other, we're kind of like an old gay couple that don't have sex anymore. They never had sex. But the idea is that this friendship is the basis of the relationship, and then her best friend falls in love, and you can, you know. Anyway, it's a study of a woman who's basically, I wouldn't say she's lost, but she just doesn't know what she wants out of life.
It's a very lighthearted, very entertaining black and white film also. And you know how I feel about Woody Allen, but that's all I could think about.
It looks like Manhattan.
Exactly.
It was shot exactly like Woody Allen's
Manhattan.
Noah
Baumbach is the director of the film, and he did a movie that I absolutely love called The Squid and the Whale. This in 2005. He also did a movie called Greenberg in 2010, which starred Greta, and now the two of them actually are an item. And they're partners in filmmaking. And if this is the beginning of a series of films they'll be doing, they've got a good future ahead
of them. No, I have to admit, it took me a while to get on their wavelength. This movie,
it's quirky.
I resisted it for about 45 minutes before it finally sucked me in.
It's not an easy one.
Why is it titled Frances Ha?
Well, you got to see the movie to get that because it's revealed in the final frame. Just another piece of trivia here, too. The gal who plays Frances' roommate, Mickey Sumner, is the daughter of Sting and Trudy Styler. So she's and it's very well cast. Noah Baumbach knows how to cast his movies.
Yeah. Okay, that film again, Frances Ha. Cynthia Haynes, let's move on to a film, What Maisie Knew. This is a modern adaptation of Henry James' 1897 novel about despicable parents battling over the custody of their young daughter.
This is a movie I was really looking forward to. I'm a huge Julianne Moore fan, and I would watch just about anything that she does. And I think she was probably one of the best things in this movie. This dysfunctional family drama, to contend that it was adapted from Henry James's 1897 novel, it doesn't make the transfer as far as I'm concerned. It is tedious. I was just very frustrated with the film throughout because it was just very repetitive. You've got these warring parents. Julianne Moore plays an aging rock star. Steve Coogan plays the divorced husband who was an art dealer. And there's this wonderful little six-year-old, Onata April, I believe is her name, who I feel she tried very hard but was somewhat miscast in this film. Along comes Nanny, this gorgeous character played by Jana Vanderham, and then Alexander Skarsgård plays the mom's new boyfriend slash husband. And it's sort of a Kramer versus Kramer without any real drama throughout the film. So I was really disappointed, and I think the mistake was in the casting of a young girl who just didn't have what it took to carry a film like this. And it's just warring parents back and forth, and it just wore me down after a while.
That would wear you down. We do have a clip here from What Maisie Knew.
We've got the nanny and the new husband trying to decide what to do with Maisie because, once again, one or the other of the parents have forgotten to pick her up or drop her off or wouldn't be able to make it. And she's not feeling well. She says she's got the bug.
You're 3 days late. It's 10 o'clock at night and she's not well.
It's okay. We'll take a taxi.
It's not okay. She's got a temperature of 101. It's...
Hey. You're not feeling well, are you?
I have the bug.
Got the bug. That sounds bad.
Why didn't you come?
I'm sorry. It was this whole mix-up and... Well, kind of like three mix-ups, actually.
I have to take my medicine in an hour.
Okay. So what do you want me to do? Susanna's gonna kill me.
Come back in a day or two.
A day or... I can't come back tonight without her. Susanna's going on tour this weekend.
Lincoln, she's a child. She's not well.
That film again, What Maisie Knew, very mixed review from Cynthia Haynes on that one, right?
Yes.
Okay. Let's move on here to one more film here, Cynthia. At Any Price, a son prefers race cars to his father's tractors. Imagine that.
This is a first feature film by Raman Barani, who is an indie filmmaker who made Man Push Cart. And as Bob described Tiger Eyes, I think this is another one of those after-school specials, except for a few somewhat graphic sex scenes with Heather Graham. It's basically the story of a young guy played by the ever-gorgeous Zac Efron, who's a put-upon young man. His name is Dean, as in James. You get that sense throughout. Dennis Quaid plays this very intense Iowa seed salesman who's an overbearing, unethical father. And Quaid plays this ruthless, kind of self-centered, superficial farmer. And you've got some commentary in there about altering seeds and washing seeds and reselling seeds and that sort of thing. But basically, it's this father-son drama. And Quaid just doesn't deliver. He really doesn't.
Even though he's intense and overbearing, it just doesn't come across?
No, there's nothing interesting or charismatic about the way he played that particular character.
And you get the sense that Heather Graham's career isn't exactly on the upward swing these days. I've seen a couple of films with her lately and not a whole lot there.
Yeah, she has two very brief sex scenes, one with the father and one with the son.
Well, she's Democratic anyway.
I guess so. And there's sort of this subgenre right now of heartland dramas. Maybe we could do a show on that. Promised Land came out recently about fracking.
Okay.
I think the other thing, Steve, before I forget, is the extent to which farmers were played as cliches. That's one of the reasons I love the movie Mud so much, is because those characters in Arkansas on the Mississippi seemed so real, and they were treated like
real people.
Okay, again, that film there is At Any Price. Cynthia, one more sort of mixed review. If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR, and we're reviewing some of the latest art, independent, and foreign films now showing with our critics Cynthia Haynes and Bob Butler. And let's move on to a film based on a true story. It's called The Iceman, about Richard Kuklinski, who led a double life as a devoted family man and a contract killer.
Whitey Bulger, anyone?
Yeah. Well, here's the great thing about when this movie came out a month ago, I thought, well, that's good for a week. Not because it's a bad movie, but because it's a very small movie, very intense movie. It stars Michael Shannon, possibly the creepiest man in movies, and a guy who has a fan base that's much deeper than anybody, I think, realizes.
I agree with you.
The movie's still playing here. Shannon plays Kuklinski. This movie follows him from the 1960s through the late 80s when he was finally arrested, and They think he's responsible for at least 100 murders. Now, man, what makes this interesting for me is that it isn't really about the murders. The movie, it's directed by a guy named Ariel Vroman, is about a man who has compartmentalized his life. He has a wife played by Winona Ryder. He's got two daughters. He's convinced them that he deals in international currency. He's got a fancy suit. I guess killing pays well. but it's about a guy who has managed to create two existences. Now, one of the things I love about this movie is everywhere you look, there are well-known actors playing like New Jersey slime balls. It's wonderful. You've got David Schwimmer, James Franco, Stephen Dorff, people like this, and some of them you don't even recognize because they're in such a, you know. So
right,
many...
and often in films that's a distraction, but in this film it works.
No, it really does work. So this is, I would call this a modest pleasure. It's not like the movie itself is great, but Shannon is so good at getting this guy's dual nature.
What grade did you give this film?
I gave this a B.
A B?
Yeah.
Take Shelter was the last film that he did. He has a small part in that wonderful movie Mud. Playing the brother of
one of the kids,
and so anyway, I think he's just really one of the best actors working today.
And you liked it too, it sounds like.
Oh, very much.
Okay, yes. Two thumbs up for the film The Iceman. Okay, Kon-Tiki, Cynthia, take it away.
Now, this is back when documentaries were documentaries.
You got that right.
You know, in every film course you would ever take in college, one of the movies besides The Eskimo.
Oh, Nanako the North.
Nanako the North. You had to watch Kon-Tiki, which was an actual documentary. And this is a wonderful recreation of Thor Heyerdahl's 1947 voyage across the Pacific. As an ethnologist, his contention was that people from South America traveled across the Pacific and settled Polynesia. Now, what he wanted to do was create a way to get there in a... Well, I wouldn't call
historically
it a vehicle.
Accurate Historic, or plausible.
Right. Plausible raft using balsa wood and materials that were available 1,000 years ago. And he had these five crazy guys who agreed to go with him. And it is just quite the adventure, beautifully shot. It was filmed in Danish and in
English.
English at the same time. And There is some CGI in the film involving some sharks and whatever, but I mean there's some real Jaws moments in there, I would say. But it's beautifully filmed and it's quite a story. And the lead actor in the film bears a striking resemblance to Peter O'Toole in Lawrence of Arabia, if you remember how he looked with that shock of blonde hair. But anyway, this film, the documentary that was actually made during the original voyage, won an Oscar for Best Documentary, and it became a best-selling book that every school kid had to read at some point. So anyway, I just think it's a very entertaining way to spend an afternoon, and it's not a film that you can watch on your cell phone or your computer. You should go to a theater to see it. It will be in the big theater at Glenwood Arts, and it's a truly entertaining adventure film.
Well, I began this show thinking there wasn't any good movies out there worth seeing, and now I can't make a list long enough of films I want to go see. That's how this this show goes sometimes. Again, we're talking about the latest art, independent, and foreign films now showing. Cynthia Haynes and Bob Butler are our guests here today. Okay, let's move on to In the House, Bob Butler, A Teacher Becomes Obsessed with a Student's Essays.
This is a wonderfully perverse movie. I really kind of love it. Fabrice Luchini, a character actor that goes way back, I remember he was in Claire's Knee long, long ago, plays a French high school teacher. He's got a bunch of students who are bored with studying Flaubert and the stuff they're supposed to be studying, but he has one student, a guy played by Ernst Umhauer, who turns in an essay. They're supposed to write an essay about something they've done, and he writes an essay about going to tutor one of his co-classmates and falling sort of in love with this kid's house and his family. He writes it in such a way that the teacher reading this essay goes, this kid's got real talent. But more than that, the teacher becomes a little bit obsessed with this kid's penetration into another family. It goes so far that the kid starts making passes at his classmate's mother.
Wow. The kid who wrote the essay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what happens is that the teacher in order to keep this partnership between the tutor and the classmate going, actually slips them advanced copies of a test so that the tutoring will prove to be spectacularly successful and will continue so that this other student will keep writing.
And the kid longs to belong.
He's from the wrong side of the tracks, basically. And this family lives in a house that looks like Wally and the Beaver should have been there. It's like no house I have ever seen in a French movie before. It looks like an American suburb.
Well, the other character in here is Kristen Scott Thomas, who plays the teacher's wife.
Yeah.
She's a gallery owner, and she's an absolute hoot. I mean, the film is clever. It's fun. It's thought-provoking. It's got a lot going for it.
Well, the other thing is you don't know if the story the kid is telling is true. You see it as the teacher's reading it, but the kid may be making it all up.
Yeah.
So when it's all over, you go, has he been sucked in? Is he sacrificing his career and his honesty for the sake of basically reading a serialization that's totally fabricated?
Hmm.
It's a very interesting movie. Yeah.
So you both like this one, too?
Yes, yeah. It's in French. It's in French.
Some subtitles then, right?
Yep.
That's In the House. That film, again, a teacher becomes obsessed with a student's essays here. Cynthia Renoir.
This is a film. It's been around for a while.
Yeah.
And it's set in the French Riviera in the summer of 1915. And it's the story of the Impressionist painter Pierre-Auguste Renoir and his son Jean, who subsequently goes on to become a celebrated filmmaker. And I thought that would have been a more interesting film than the one that we watched that's currently showing here in town. The setting is beautiful. The acting is fantastic. And they used a guy named Guy Reeves, who was a forger, not a copier. He paints non-existing works by the great painters. So Renoir's hands are crippled by arthritis, and you see someone actually creating these fabulous paintings, and this was done by a man who actually does that. So anyway, it is just kind of a run-of-the-mill. The father and son are both infatuated with a young woman in the film, and I don't know. It wasn't particularly extraordinary story about an extraordinary man.
Okay. That film again, Renoir. All right. Bob Butler, Reluctant Fundamentalist, a story about a Pakistani's gradual estrangement from America. Sounds topical to me.
It's very topical. It was made by Meera Nair, she's Indian but was raised in Uganda. She has quite a background. She's a very good filmmaker sometimes. I don't know if you've ever seen her film with Denzel Washington, Mississippi Masala, about an interracial affair in the American South. Pretty spectacular stuff. But then there's also things like Amelia, the Amelia Earhart documentary, which just sort of sat there when you expected it to fly. The Reluctant Fundamentalist is about a young Pakistani man who comes to the United States and becomes a whiz on Wall Street. His mentor is Kiefer Sutherland. But it's about his gradual, how would you call this? Disenfranchisement and alienation from the American way of life. Until by the end of the film, he's back in Pakistan and may or may not be involved in the kidnapping of a teacher who is not coincidentally a CIA informer.
Now, this estrangement began in 9/11, and so he's been rethinking
his priorities
as a Muslim. Yes.
Yeah. It's an interesting topic, but somehow I was left a bit cold by it. What about you, Cynthia?
I think it was the actor who was Riz Ahmed did not do a very good job in creating that transition from one stage in his life to another.
We have a clip here from The Reluctant Fundamentalist, right?
I believe this is with Kiefer Sutherland confronting this young man who wants to rise in the world of finance.
A position at our firm as a financial analyst is one of the most sought-after jobs in the entire world. Lift up the hood. Show me what makes you run. Where are you from?
Lahore in Pakistan.
Are you on financial aid?
Yes, I am.
It's more difficult for an international student to be accepted in an Ivy League school if they apply for aid. You must have really needed the money.
Yeah, I did.
The accent's great. Makes you sound like royalty. How did your rich kid friends at Princeton react to your Horatio Alger story? Most of them don't even know where their bootstraps are.
You know what, Jim? We don't really discuss it. I know you're seeing a lot of people today, so...
Wait. Your friends here don't even know, do they? That's interesting. That's lifting up the hood.
Well, I'm thinking
that's a pretty good. That's a good exchange of dialogue. Yeah. No question.
If you like The Namesake, which is another film of hers, this is a film that you probably will like. But for me, it was a bit disappointing.
That's The Reluctant Fundamentalist. Okay, let's go to the bulletin board here. And Bob Butler, what's going on at the library?
Well,
these
we got a couple things. You know, on Friday nights this summer, we have a series called Paul Rudd, Hometown Hero, and we're showing the comedies of Paul Rudd. Coming up this month on the 21st is Our Idiot Brother. We showed these movies on the rooftop, under the stars. We had 100 people for the first one. It's fun.
Wow.
Bring your chairs, bring your blankets, sit under the stars. It starts about 8:45 on Friday night, June 21st.
Downtown or is it?
Downtown. The downtown up on the rooftop. And I'll tell you what, sitting there as the sun goes down, watching the city lights come on in the towers around you, nice breeze,
not
and then
bad.
The movie starts. It is pretty awesome. A couple other film series we got going. Down in the film vault downstairs at the Central Library, we have a Order in the Court film series that actually was honoring the recent visit by Sandra Day O'Connor. Upcoming films, these are on Saturday afternoons, are Presumed Innocent, Witness for the Prosecution, and Primal Fear, all courtroom dramas.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the evenings, Monday evenings, we've got, we're showing surfer movies just because it's summer and we're not getting much beach action here. Coming up are Soul Surfer and Muscle Beach Party with Annette and... who is it, Frankie? Yeah, Annette and Frankie. Anyway,
you can't get more summer than that.
You can't get more summer than that. Okay, and so those are the basic library things right now.
Okay.
We have a lot going on at the Tivoli and also the Glenwood Arts. The Tivoli Performing Arts Program is going to feature Kenneth Branagh's The Magic Flute this coming Sunday at noon, and Director Branagh will participate in a live streaming Q&A after Sunday's screening. This is the future of the use of theaters in not only this community but around the country. And this is a phenomenal opportunity.
A live
for
conversation
people
with a great actor.
Yes, but also to see fantastic plays, to see wonderful opera, and I think, you know, Tivoli's the place to see it. The show will be repeated again on Tuesday, June the 11th at 1:30. Also coming up at the Tivoli, Kansas City Gay and Lesbian Film Festival runs from the June 20th through the 27th. I had a chance to see James Franco's latest bizarre film involving what he calls lost footage from the film Cruising. Remember that?
Oh, sure.
Al Pacino?
That was the Al Pacino film that was so controversial.
Yes. Well, anyway, Franco contends he's found some footage that they had to edit out in order to get a rating.
Faux footage?
Yeah, faux footage.
Yeah.
Exactly right. UMKC Department of Film Summer Musical Series runs June the 18th through July 9th at the Tivoli. And then coming up on June 27th, July 3rd, July 7th, is Helen Mirren in the audience. And this is one I really want to make an effort to see myself. Helen Mirren reprises her Academy Award winning role as Queen Elizabeth II for 60 years. She's met with various prime ministers, and we get to see this interaction once again.
Wow.
Portrayed by the wonderful Helen Mirren. And if, in a case you didn't get a chance to write all these down or make notes, just go to tivolikc.com and you'll get complete information about this. The Glenwood Arts is experimenting with something that's available in cities around the country, and we're pretty fortunate to have it here in Kansas City. It's the Gather Preview Series that gives audiences in select cities the chance to see the best new independent cinema in theaters before anyone else, even before L.A. and New York.
Yes!
And most of these films, you know, films turn over on Friday. Well, these are being shown on Thursday evenings, and coming up, we've got More Than Honey, which will be Thursday, June the 13th at 7:30, followed the following next Thursday by The Good Son, and then Broken on June the 27th. And again, go to their webpage, which is fineartsgroup.com, to get detailed information about it and support it. It's a subscription series, and it benefits the Kansas
City. And stand
Film
up
Festival.
For Kansas City in terms of beating New York and L.A.
Speaking of standing up for Kansas City, I want you to go to your Google. I want you to type in two words, Withered World. Withered World is a series of locally made short films by different directors. The four of them are now posted online. It's about the end of the world and what people do on the last day of the world. They are fantastic.
Okay, well, good way to spend the last hour. Cynthia Haynes, thanks so much for coming in. Bob Butler, always good to have you. You can find Bob's reviews at butlercinemascene.com. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Our show's theme music is by Bobby Watson and the UMKC Conservatory of Music Concert Jazz Band. We had help this week from KCUR's Kim Noble, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, Caitlin Brennan, and Sangeeta Sastry. Our senior producer is Steven Steigman. Have a great weekend, all. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.